Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Nick Talks. I'm your host, actor, singer, and content creator, Nikki Marina. And this is my podcast where I talk about whatever the fuck I want, but mostly nerd shit, mental health, and random millennial ranting. So make sure to follow me on all my social platforms at Nikki Marina, N-I-C-Q-U-E-M-A-R-I-N-A. My platforms are TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram. Those are my major ones. I also have a Twitter. And join those so that you can receive updates of when Nick Talks will be taping live on my stories and community posts, because my life is a little crazy and I tape these as I am able. Today we are taping live on YouTube. Hello to everybody on YouTube. Thank you for joining me. So basically I'm gonna cover the topic that I've chosen for today, and then I'm gonna go to the chat and answer some questions and some comments and stuff, all right? So the comeback of this podcast was based on a lot of questions that people had about characters that inspire me and the lessons that they've taught me, also the movies and shows that they're associated with. And so we have a long list that we're running down, basically, of those. Last week we did Wanda. Today we're doing Doctor Strange. And Doctor Strange is one that became a favorite of mine, honestly, in recent years. I believe the movie came out in 2016. And of course, if you read the comics, you might know a little bit about Stephen Strange. He's kind of one of the lesser known ones, I think, in the comics. But I've known a few that honestly, that's been their favorite guy for a long time. But I believe the movie came out in 2016. And it took on a way different meaning for me in later years, because the next year I was diagnosed with PTSD. And a lot of the lessons that I learned from these characters are very much tied to my mental health. And, you know, and like just doing a rundown for those of you who don't remember the plot of Doctor Strange, but it's pretty simple. he's a big shot neurosurgeon, you know, very high achieving guy, you know, big ego, you know, problem solver kind of guy. He gets into a car accident and he basically injures his hands beyond the point that he can use it to be a surgeon anymore. He tries literally everything, all sorts of expensive surgeries and stuff, to fix his hands so that he can be a surgeon again. He literally goes bankrupt. He spends all of his money trying to get his hands back. And when Western medicine fails him, he travels east to Kamartaj, I believe in Nepal. And he goes to the sanctum and meets the Ancient One. And he ends up basically training to be a sorcerer. And he goes to learn magic in order to get his hands back eventually. But then kind of along the way, he realizes and is told by the Ancient One that, you know, you have two courses of action here. You could use magic literally all the time to keep your hands back to the way that they were, right? Or you could continue to go down this road of being a sorcerer, which is completely different from being a neurosurgeon. But you're really fucking good at being a sorcerer, and you can help so many people. Like, you can be like so much more help for the greater good, especially because it would include him letting go a lot of his ego from being like that, from what he had before when he was a neurosurgeon. And so what this means to me is, you know, some of us that are disabled, maybe we spent a good amount of our time not being disabled. And to be fair, I believe that I've had anxiety all of my life clinically. And so I do believe that I have been disabled all of my life. I've just been masking and I didn't know. But definitely for the first 20 something years of my life, I was able to do so many things. I was an overachiever, and I placed a lot of my value in the things that I could do, the amount of things that I could do, how impressive I could be, how smart I was, how much I could demonstrate, like how awesome I am at doing things, much like Stephen Strange, you know, very much ego driven, very much accomplishment driven, which is fine to be accomplishment driven, but it literally became my entire identity, to the point that when I was disabled, you know, and I became very, very disabled, I remember that I after I got out of this psychiatric hospital, actually after an attempt, I went to speak to a psychiatrist and re-examine my diagnosis. And, you know, I told her my entire life story and everything. And the psychiatrist said, "Oh, you have no concept of self-worth." And I was so confused because I'm like, what do you mean? Like, all of my life, I've been the most confident person that I know, you know, even arrogant to a degree. Like, what do you mean? And my psychiatrist said, like, who are you when you're not doing things for other people, or you're not like showing how useful you are or showing how talented you are? What do you like to do? Who are you? And I was terrified because I didn't know. I couldn't answer that fucking question. Even what I do now, what I'm doing right now, I'm a performer, I'm an actor. Everything that I do, and for a lot of us in jobs like this, and a lot of different jobs, everything I do relies on external validation. What I can do for other people, how I can make other people feel, how if I can make them laugh, you know, how I'm performing all the time for people. Very little of it comes from inside myself. And so I had to set out kind of on a journey to answer that question, who am I, when I don't have all these skills and stuff that I attach to my self-worth? And a lot of us can attach, I feel, you know, our talents and our ability to do things to our self-worth, much like Stephen did, especially those of us who are like high-achieving kids, maybe gifted and talented kids that were pushed by our parents. And it was just established very early on that you are worth as much as you can demonstrate you are useful, you are intelligent, and talented. That's what your worth is. And so when disability comes along and limits your ability to do those things, you can completely lose your sense of self-worth, because who are you without your abilities? You know, if you're disabled, who are you without your abilities? And that's what Stephen went through. He was no longer able to be a neurosurgeon. And when you're becoming a neurosurgeon, like, that takes years of schooling, like ridiculous amounts of money. That's a lot of fucking effort going into becoming a neurosurgeon. And so on top of the trauma of, you know, being in the car accident, right, the trauma of losing all of that, like losing all of that, you know, progress, all that stuff that you put behind it, that is so painful. And it was really painful. It was so painful for me, and still is, that there are things that I can't do anymore, or I can't do it as easily because I'm a PTSD veteran. I think I'm currently doing the one job that I can do, which is performing and acting and stuff like that. And even still, like, I started to get stage fright, you know, in the last few years, which is very, very not regular for me, because I'd never gotten stage fright in my entire life. Like, I'm made for this. I'm made to perform. And I started to get stage fright. It's harder for me to drive. I'm starting to drive now because we've moved into a new place that has parking, thank goodness, which is a privilege in New York, New Jersey area, because the 4 years that I was living here, we didn't have a parking situation, except for like street parking and like just first come, first serve. I could not drive because I have a dissociation issue and emotional regulation and stuff like that. So I couldn't drive. I cannot work in an office because my trauma took place in an office. I tried twice to work in a corporate or like office setting, and I could not. It landed me in the hospital with ideations. Like, I just can't. And even though I very much love being able to do what I do and kind of be free from having to work jobs that I hated, there is a lot of guilt I experience behind not being able to do what other 30-year-olds can, or what other 30-year-olds are supposed to be able to do, like hold down a job. That's something that I can't do, like traditionally, a traditional job. I cannot hold down a job. And for such a long time, like Stephen Strange, it made me feel like I had no worth. Now, Stephen goes through this transformation of becoming a sorcerer, and he's very, very good at it. And And part of the reason why he became a neurosurgeon is to help people. A big part of it is because of his ego, which I think happens when we become very, like, achievement-driven, high-achieving. Like, even the good things that we do, it becomes not really for the greater good. It's more for our ego. And, you know, like the ancient one said, like, you can use magic all the time, like, literally 24/7 to fix your hands. Or you can accept that the you before the car crash is gone, and you can move forward with this new version of you that you've been able to create, that you've been able to reinvent, and the world will be so much better for it. And so the lesson that I take from Dr. Strange is that trauma changes you. It changes you in ways that you can't possibly imagine, and it's very, very frustrating, and you can lose your sense of self-worth. It's a radical acceptance that the version of you before your trauma is a completely different person, dead and gone. I definitely feel like that. I feel like the Nikki before 2016 is dead. I don't know her. She doesn't exist anymore. And that's very painful because you've spent your entire life kind of building that identity, but trauma derails it. And the thing is, moving on from that, healing and reinventing yourself is completely possible. It is completely possible for you to, like, reach a higher version of yourself through your healing journey. And, you know, you can choose to give that suffering meaning and find new ways to be impressive, to be talented, new ways to help people, to, like, you know, really assist the greater good. But you have to stop trying to fix your hands. I spent a lot of time just trying not to have PTSD. And I still kind of do because I go to therapy every week. Maybe one day I won't have it. But that's not likely. It's not likely at all. So for a long time, I just tried to not have PTSD, which sounds weird, but like, I tried doing the things that I usually could do. I tried holding down two jobs. I tried driving. It didn't work because, like I said, the reality was that the me before my trauma was dead, and the person that I am now has a completely different ability set, skill set, and I have to work with that. And I feel like I am such a much better version of myself than I was when I was an extremely high-achieving, you know, child, and before, you know, my life was completely derailed. But it came with a radical acceptance that you're a different person now, and you have to stop trying to fix your hands. You can reinvent yourself. You can become a higher version of yourself, you know, and a more awesome version, more self-aware version, more benevolent, graceful, generous type of person, especially because you've been through so much shit. You can have, you know, greater empathy for people. But in order to get to that point, in order to heal, you have to stop trying to fix your hands. Like, you have to stop trying to fix yourself to the extent that you want to go back to what you were before, because you're not going to. You're just not. Even if you can get rid of some of the symptoms and stuff, you're just never going to be that person that you were before. And that radical acceptance is just so, so fucking important. I find that trying to get back to a version that of yourself that you were before can leave you very, it can leave you very stuck, and it can leave you very sad. And, you'll just never grow. You'll always regress, and you'll always be stuck, just like stuck in one place. So that's what Stephen Strange teaches me, radical acceptance. You can absolutely become a better, different person after your trauma, but you have to stop trying to fix your hands. So that's what I got to say about Doctor Strange. And then we're going to go to the chat for any questions or comments. Again, please don't forget to follow me on my social media, on TikTok, on YouTube, and on Instagram at Nikki Marina, NICQUEMARINA. And I can't wait to do some of the other characters that we have in the lineup. Some of them that we have in the lineup are Tony Stark, Bucky Barnes, Sam Wilson, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, just as a show in general. Loki as a character, Thor as a character. We just have a lot lined up. So I don't know if there's anything in the chat, but I'm going to go to the chat, and I saw a few comments, let's answer some questions if there are any. It was really happy I stumbled upon this today. Aw, thank you. It's hard to see the chat bubbles. They disappear so quickly. Yeah, for sure. This is the character that I love talking about, because I think a lot of people miss this about Doctor Strange. You're such a beautiful, hilarious soul. I love the normalization of mental health. You know, sometimes I feel some type of way about it, because like the extent to which like mental illness is such a prevalent thing, it shouldn't be. Like people say like it's okay to be okay, and not to not be okay, and I know it's okay to not be okay. But I want to be okay, you know? On top of therapy, how did you learn to recreate yourself or learn to find the new you? On top of therapy, things I did, I started doing yoga, which is, you know, more of a spiritual practice than physical. It's not meant to be a workout. There are some creators that talk about yoga quite a bit. One is Nick Yoga on TikTok, N-I-K. Yoga, I believe, is her username, and she's very good. I highly encourage people to follow creators that basically promote the ancient sacred practice of yoga. But that yoga helped me to be more mindful. I started doing martial arts, just things with my body that helped me, you know, practice mindfulness. Martial arts is definitely about strength and stuff, but it's not about being angry, and it's not about like, you know, being out of control. You have to be extremely in control and very, very calm to be good at martial arts. And I love what it does for me. Therapy, yoga, martial arts. Those are some of the big things that I've done. I do cognitive behavioral therapy, and I do dialectical behavioral therapy, which is what I have in like a few minutes. Those are some of the things that have helped me just kind of like take a step back from being so like achievement driven. Like martial arts is very like said achievement driven, but it's, you know, to an extent it's not about winning or losing in some ways. Like in some ways it is, but it's about doing the best that you can, and you know, just you being your own, like you being your biggest opponent, and trying to like just become better than you were the day before. And if you lose, like as long as you were doing the best that you can, that's all that matters. My Taekwondo master really does not like it when I get mad at myself, and he always has to remind me, like, just do what you can, it's fine. And now I have a blue belt in Taekwondo. I love it. So I'm very proud of myself in that. I'm going to be moving toward a black belt soon. Any other questions? Let's see what else we got. I saw a few pop up, but like I said, the bubbles disappear so quickly on YouTube. My goodness, it's not like that on TikTok. Next week we'll go to Instagram, and I'm just gonna rotate rotate through the platforms. But yeah, what else we got? I saw somebody say that they kind of like skim past Doctor Strange. That happens quite a lot. And like I said, I didn't really get these lessons from this character until after 2016, after it came out. What about someone who isn't good at anything, who can't even do basic chores right, can't write what they want to write, can't draw what they want to draw, can't do anything ever at all? Like I said, these things, like these lessons, you have to, I feel like you have to apply it to, like, you know, to yourself and your specific situation. And the thing is, like, getting to a point where you're not trying to, like, get back to where you were before, like, it takes some time, because there was probably like 1 or 2 years where I was really frustrated with the things that I couldn't do. It takes a process to get there. And if you're not there yet, then like that's completely, you know, that's completely that's fine, you know. Everybody in their own time. But the thing is, like, you don't have to be useful to have value. Like, just this comment just said, you don't have to be useful to have value. That's something that I had to learn, is that you have value just by being here, and experiencing life and doing what you can. I think that's what it's about. Like, and I appear able-bodied, and I believe I have more physical abilities than other people with different disabilities. And I think that all we can do is work with what we got. All we can do is work with, you know, what our individual bodies and minds can do, and just do our best. I can't speak to people that don't have the disabilities that I have, but I'm just talking about the lessons that I've learned. So I hope that it does help people that do have different disabilities than I do. I guess that's what I have to say. That's what I have to say to that. I do recognize that there are people that can do much less, like they can't walk. Speaking is very, 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 very hard. I have a brother who is autistic. Both of us, I believe, are on the spectrum. I'm getting that looked at, but I'm like 95% sure I'm also on the spectrum. But he had very high needs growing up, and there was a period of time where he couldn't talk. At least I do have experience, at least, you know, taking care of somebody who, you know, there's a lot of things that are very hard for them to do. So yeah, that's what I have to say about that. I'm checking the time. I gotta go soon. we got a few minutes for like a few more questions. Glad to answer any. And I guess as a reminder, I'm going to cycle through my platforms as far as the live tapings. And so next week we're going to do Instagram. Let me bring this over. Let me read it so I'm like, how did you manage the healthy friendships that you wanted to keep? I have had experiences with people. It's a fine line, because I believe and I have seen that you can get to a point where, that's the thing, you can get to a point where your mental, like not managing your mental illness as much as you can make you a pretty insufferable person to be around. And in order to like maintain healthy relationships and for you to be healthy, like you gotta take responsibility at some point. And I'm very grateful for the people that have stuck by me. I don't think that I've always been the best as far as managing my mental health. And I don't like, you know, I hate to think about the times when I wasn't. But I believe that people in my life have always known that I am always doing my best. And so they have supported me and stood by me in some of my darkest hours. And there are some that have, and then there's some that like they have, they've abandoned me. And those are stories that I will not tell, because of just how painful it was. I've also had, experiences with people that I don't believe managed their mental health at all, that did not do anything to manage it, and sometimes weaponized it against people as an excuse to keep on, you know, being toxic. You know, even Stephen Strange kind of had a moment like that in the movie, where he, like, it just, you know, his manic phase of, you know, trying to find a cure for his hands, and he lashes out at Christine. And that's not okay. And the people that you hurt, like, their feelings are valid too. So I think what I've done to maintain healthy relationships is, first of all, like, take responsibility for myself, do the best that I can, communicate, and just, I think, like, just personal accountability. Personal accountability has been huge for me, and I have a fantastic support system. That's the thing. Like, you need a support system to get through this, but you also need to be accountable. I have cut people off that also are mentally ill because I'm like, I know that you're going through some shit, but I tell you what, you ain't gonna talk to me crazy like that. And you're not gonna manipulate me. You're not gonna weaponize your condition against me. You are not. Like, you are not, you know, what's it called? Exempt. You're not exempt from, you know, accountability completely just because you have a mental illness. There are aspects about mental illness, PTSD, you know, and other things that you cannot control. And that's understandable. Some people are just not equipped to be friends or part of a support system with people that have mental illnesses or disabilities. And I don't think that's a great thing. But some people are just not equipped. And some of those people are people with other mental illnesses, I believe, that are not accountable and expect, and the grace that they expect from others, they are not willing to give to other people. And I hate that. I hate it when people, you know, say like, oh, you know, if you ever feel like hurting yourself, everything, like, just call. Or like, you know, when people take their lives, people are like, oh, why didn't they just say something? Why didn't they reach out? You know, people be like, whatever you need, whatever you need. You don't know, like, you don't. Do you know what whatever you need means? Because sometimes that might mean staying up till midnight to talk someone off the ledge. It might mean, you know, driving somebody to the hospital. It might mean sitting with them while they're crying, while they're having an episode. You know, it might mean helping them do breathing exercises. It might mean driving over to their place and making them eat. Like, you know, it takes a lot. It takes a lot to be a part of a support system for someone who has a disability. And some people are just not equipped for it. I think that in my life, those people have shown their colors. And they've either left or I have cut them off. And my life is better for it because I have plenty of people in my life, both able-bodied and not, that are a great part of my support system. And they are patient with me, because they know that I'm doing my best. And they know also that I'm always going to do my best to be there for them. That's the thing. Like, you know, if you want to have meaningful relationships, you also have to be able to do everything that you have to, I feel like you have to be willing to at least try, you know, to be a friend to that person. You got to be, you know, able to show up. Like, there's a lot of times where I have to just truck through some panic attacks because I told a person that I'd be there. Sometimes there's times where, like, it's very bad. I'm just like, I'm so sorry. I am, you know. But I try not to make that a habit. You know what I mean? And I'm honest. I'll get to the function. I'll be like, I'm not gonna lie, I had to take a Xanny to get here. But don't worry about me. I'm fine. I'm gonna truck through it. I'm gonna be okay. I'm gonna be okay, kind of. But yeah, you gotta be accountable, and you gotta just, like, you know, I think that if people know that you're gonna try and show up for them as much as you can, That's another key, I think, to keeping healthy people in your life, in your support system. So that's me. That's my opinion. Some people might feel differently, I guess, maybe. But all I know is that that's the system that feels healthy and useful to me. So, you know, that's good. And, you know, sometimes you're not equipped to be, like I said, part of, you know, someone's support system. I've been, you know, there's been times where it's just like very, very dark and I'm just of no help to anybody and I just had to shut myself away. And sometimes it just be like that, you know, that's okay. It is what it is. Like I said, you're still accountable to, I think, the people that you don't talk to when you get out of that phase, and they're allowed to feel however they feel about it. But yeah, so that's how I feel about that. Anything else, you guys? I have a little more time than I thought that I did. That's good. That's good. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yes. Any questions relevant to the topic at hand? Stephen Strange, mental health, stuff like that. So. You could be hearing my dog. The dog's walking around with a bone in his mouth. Oh my goodness. Questions relevant to the topic at hand. Thank you. Do you prefer movie or comic strange? I very often prefer movie. Just because I think, you know, for me and for audiences, it's just more digestible visually. Most people are visual learners, I think. I don't know. I think, you know, I'm a movie gal. I did read the comics when I was younger, but for me, I retain information better through movies, and I think a lot of people do. And because there's a lot of people that haven't touched a comic book at all that are getting into Marvel, which I completely support, by the way, very, very much so. I think it's more easily digestible for audiences through movies. So that's my opinion. Yeah. All right. Anything else? Like I said, next week I think we're going to do either Bucky Barnes or Tony Stark. I haven't decided yet, but I will. Yeah, I got started with the movies too. Yeah, a lot of people got started with Marvel with the movies, which I think is awesome, because they're once upon a time. First of all, comics are really fucking expensive. So, he had a sister that got sick. He felt like he failed to save her, and that's why he doesn't take patients. He feel like he can't help cure. Yes, do remember that. I do remember that. Believe they touched on it in Multiverse of Madness, if I'm not mistaken. I've only seen the movie once. I've only seen the movie once, so, yeah. Are there DC characters that you feel like you relate to better than Marvel? Not really. Like, I read DC comics, but I always, like, fixated on Spider-Man when I was younger. And I think that's the thing that I like about Marvel more than DC, because I think a lot of the DC characters, at least the flagship ones, you know, they're just so much larger than life. They're damn near gods, and kind of, I can't quite sometimes pinpoint their personalities. I latched on to Peter Parker very, very early because Peter Parker has very distinct personality. Everybody knows what Spider-Man is like. And also it was very relatable to my life at the time. I was, you know, extremely poor. The only way I could read comic books was, you know, going to Barnes & Noble and just picking what they had. You know, he was a poor Jewish boy from Queens. I'm a poor black girl from Houston living in a very, very small space with their family, you know, just hustling, trying to make it out. And yeah, Spider-Man was just always the most relatable guy to me. And so I latched onto that, almost forgot everybody else. I was a Spider-Man girly. I still am. I'm so grateful to be a character in the Spider-Man universe now, as a social correspondent for the Daily Bugle. That is so cool. You can look it up. I'm in Universe TRN-688. That's fucking crazy. I can't believe that. love that. Well, anyway, I think I'm going to close it out because, like I said, I got to get to therapy, guys. But thank you. Thank you so much for joining me on YouTube, y'all. Like I said, make sure that you follow me on my other social media, on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. And I will see you next time. I'll see you in the next episode. Thank you guys so much.